Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, we talk comedy with Rob Schneider. RJ Bell chimes in on some picks as well in the first half. First, Simply Safe. 83% of burglars say they look if there's an alarm. Yeah, that makes sense. I don't know why it's not even higher than that. Only 1 in 5 homes have security because most companies don't make it easy. Expensive drilling, pulling wires, guys crawling around in the underpinning, in the attic, in the crawl spaces. Not with Simply Safe. Protects your whole home, every window, every door, every room with 24/7 monitoring at a fraction of the cost. Just $15 a month, designed to blend right into your home. And it's won a ton of awards from CNET to New York Times, Wirecutter. Visit Simply Safe, two eyes, simplysafe.com/Adam for free shipping and a 60-day risk-free trial. Make sure you go to Simply Safe. The batteries last up to 10 years. You don't have to pull wires everywhere. SimplySafe.com/Adam. Let them know I sent you at SimplySafe.com/Adam.
Just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from ACS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat. Stuff and booze. Adam's monthly nut. Adam's monthly nut. Adam's monthly nut. Adam's monthly nut.
Hey, Carolla fans, Dawson here with some good news and some bad news. Bad news first, we've sold out of Mark Garagus's mistrial for Adam's Monthly Nut. Sorry, you should have moved quicker. The good news is, sales are still open for Adam's Monthly Nut shipment, but this time we're throwing in Adam Carolla's Daddy Stop Talking instead. That's right, the book inspired by Natalia Carolla. All the rest of the items are the same, and you still got the same chance to win that golden ticket for a football Sunday with Adam. Head to Carolla Drinks now and sign up for Adam's Monthly Nut. But hurry, we will sell out. From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Rob Schneider. With Gina Gratt on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, and RJ Bell gives us his week 3 picks. And now, he already put his new cat down for scratching one of his Newman cars. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on. Mandate. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for sharing, and thank you, Gina Grad.
Thank you back.
And Bald Brian.
Me.
Hey, speaking of cats, I have a story about that cat.
Already?
There's a...
Think all the new material's going to flood in.
There's a, well...
new cat area?
Hot cat talk.
We'll see. MaxPat's got my phone because Kimmel sent me a vid last night. He texted me a vid. Of Between Two Ferns, which is not out yet, but he must have gotten hold of a
screener,
and I didn't, so he sent me a funny little snippet,
a pirated shot.
Yeah, try to figure it out from the back of my phone. We'll just play the audio for you to make you laugh. Also, there's some other MaxPat cat vids on that phone taken from like the den in the living room with Phil chasing the cat around, and then a sad,
the show has reached a new low.
Sad cat ending.
No.
So in animal related news, first off,
news. Petco's going to take that cat back.
My goddamn dog Phil would in the past take like a pork chop off of the counter.
Sure.
Because when he gets up on his hind legs, he's 6 foot tall. He's a beast. We don't train him. The only one who trains him is Olga. He doesn't listen to us. But he's now taken his racket and he's expanded it to like children's chewable vitamins and Natalia's thermos with stew in it stuff.
Like, there's just food in there. It's a creamy center.
Mm-hmm. I thought I was safe in that. One of the great Vinnie Tortorich things is get good coffee and get whole whipping cream and get good cream. And one of the
whole cream's changed my life.
I am as well. And I'm one of these guys, which I got a lot of range. Like, I fly coach if I'm paying for it. I don't even step up the business. And when it comes to Uber, it's Uber bottom. It's never
Uber
the
pool.
Uber, whatever. The lowest.
Uber F.
The lowest. I always say, you know, whatever.
Uber bottom.
Whatever airport, whatever hotel we stay at starts with the word airport.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't go to the Four Seasons. I'm that way. On the other hand, when it comes to something like cream, mm-hmm. I tell Olga, buy the glass bottle, the thick glass bottle. It's $4 mm-hmm. or whatever. I don't need the cardboard one. And that's one from the local mm-hmm. dairy, and you return the bottle for the redemption. And I like holding the cold glass and pulling it out of the refrigerator. That container, that pint or double pint or whatever of whole cream in the glass bottle that stands about 6-8 inches tall, that used to be safe on top of the counter.
Oh, no.
Oh, I know where this is going.
I used to be able to just walk in the morning, pull that out of the fridge, I'd dump a little in the coffee, and I would normally just leave it out on the counter because I was going to come back for another hit in a half hour. No longer safe anymore. Walked into the kitchen after pouring a cup of coffee, walked back in the kitchen about 9 o'clock. Phil's on his bed, and Phil is covered in a white substance because Phil doesn't have opposable thumbs, and he's trying to shotgun that
thing. He's a little clumsy with the bottle.
He dumped the entire thing on himself. So now he's just this black dog covered. It was a brand new bottle, of course, and he's covered in it. And he's laying on the bed, and he sees me. And he's like, oh, shit. And I'm like, yeah, you're in trouble, Phil. And he gets up and starts his trot of shame. It's not a walk of shame. It's a quick paced head down.
Sorry, boss.
Walking with purpose. Like, I'm heading out. He's dripping cream everywhere because he has doused himself in cream. It was a new bottle of cream, and he dumped the entire thing on his belly and on his chest and all over himself. So as he gets up and starts trotting, he's leaving a trail of not tears. I'm crying. He's leaving cream.
If only there was another creature in the house that would be happy about this.
I know.
His new pilot fish.
Yes.
I know. Perfect. So he gets up and he starts his trot and he's leaving it's like
Cream stream.
Gina. Every
please.
Good movie.
Every 5 feet is just another spot. I mean, it's all over the place.
Right.
It's all over the place. And I'm yelling, Phil, come back. But Phil thinks he's in trouble and
he's
not coming back. And he's trotting at a pace to get away from me. And I'm like yelling, get over here, stop, you know, heel or whatever. And he's like, no, I'm in trouble. I don't want to deal with this. He goes all the way down a long hall with hardwood floors. Then he makes the turn into Lynette's office with the carpet in there. And I'm like, Phil, get back. And he's trying to get away from me the whole time. And then I eventually get him into the bathroom where he's just dripping cream onto the tile. And then I'm trying to push him out the door just to get him outside.
Yep. Let the birds take him.
Yes. At a certain point, I took Phil outside and I was like, you're going in the pool, bucko. And Phil's like, no, I'm not going in the pool. And then he starts battling me.
Just to be obstinate? Because he likes the pool.
The whole thing about the pool and him, I'd say it's the same relationship people have with the pool. They'd like it to be on their own terms.
Yeah, you don't get thrown into
when
into
Ray
a pool.
Gets you into a headlock and throws you into the pool.
It's your worst day.
Right.
Ray almost did that at Fondelier's wedding.
Or it's your best day when you get to do it yourself.
Yeah.
So the dogs are kind of the same way. Like, he likes the pool on his turn,
right.
But I'm trying to corral him. He thinks he's in trouble. I'm literally trying to push him into the pool. He's fighting me the whole time. Either way, if we had had a cat at that point, it would be awesome. But after spending an hour and a half at the Petco and spending $300 adopting the cat, getting the bed, getting the scratching post, getting 2 weeks worth of food, and then the dry grazing food and the pamphlets and everything else. Olga comes walking into the house on Monday morning and she's like, I can't breathe. Oh, I can't breathe.
No.
And I was like, there was a moment where I went, well, we do have teenagers.
I was going to say, God forbid you hold on to the nanny for your 13-year-olds.
Right. But then she said the magic words to make all those thoughts scatter from my brain. What would you like for dinner?
Yeah.
Oh, somebody's cooking dinner. Oh, okay.
Kevin, you're out.
She knows how to be kept around.
Oh, she's not fucking dumb. She asks me all the time what I want for dinner and if I need to go to the store and how I'm doing on cream and all this kind of stuff.
Can I fix you up for some cream?
She gets it. She understands the kids don't really need her, but the guy who cuts the checks does.
Yeah.
So
make yourself indispensable.
Savvy.
That's great advice.
Right.
So where's Kevin?
So
he's in a Blue Apron box.
What of Kevin?
We ate him. So she's sneezing and gasping and the whole time. And then it's like, and I love the little cat.
Here comes the Amazon subscribe and save for Claritin.
Right.
This is a box case shows up every month.
So she can't breathe, even though she's in the kitchen and the cat's in Natalia's room. She just can't breathe.
Cats are terrible.
And I'm like, and so we found the nice family with the friend, the Natalia, who's also has a cat. I love the cat, blah, blah, blah. They do my least favorite thing that goes on at my house, which is they ring the doorbell, and nobody in my house answers the door but me. And I'm always kind of like, You have people showing up at like 8 o'clock at night. Don't be in your room with the door closed, with the TV turned on.
Look
like,
alive.
Get up. Like, just go let them in. And then we let them in. And then we take the $300 worth of stuff I bought 2 days earlier and we just pile it on into their hands. I'm like, thank you. And I'm like, that's the worst $300 I've ever spent in my life. Like weeks of canned food, weeks of dry food. Don't forget the scratching post. Like, just pile it all out the door.
The cat condo.
I was like, that is so much more than my parents ever spent on me my entire life. And it was all for 2.5 days worth of enjoyment.
The kitten comes with a starter kit.
Right.
You're going to pass it along.
Did Natalia cry or was she okay?
I got to tell you, I took it the hardest, I think.
What?
Because I had the only part of my childhood that was decent was two cats. Mm. And I didn't have a dog. I didn't have a basketball hoop. I didn't have a swimming pool. I didn't have parents. I didn't have anything. I didn't have money. I didn't have anything, but I had a couple of really cool cats. They were just like neighborhood cats. One was just like homeless cat that kind of found us, like adopted us. The other was like up the street, kittens in a box, you know, pull the kitten out. I got so much, you know, kind of like, I don't know, the Birdman of Alcatraz or in The Great Escape, when Steve McQueen would go down into the hole, into the cooler, and he'd bring his baseball mitt. Like, you'd be...
Well, you were the Green Mile, the guy with the mouse.
Yeah, you'd be so surprised that when you grow up in this just vacuum of attention or entertainment or any hobbies or any all the stuff that my kids are, you know, they're playing their video games. They're going to Zero Gravity World. They're going to Trampoline Land. Like, it's just hit over the head with stuff. When you grow up and your best friend is a cockroach or a mouse or something like that,
Wally over here,
you kind of put all your eggs in one basket. Like, you go, I love my cat. I mean, look, you'll do it with a bicycle. Like, I had, like, my bicycle was the most important thing in my life. My kids have bikes. They don't give a shit. You know, it's like one of 180 things that are in their life. That bike was like, I'm oiling the chain on Saturday. Wow. I'm gonna clean it. You know, like, you'd be surprised, like, how kind of singular the human mind will kind of get when all other options are off the table. And you will find yourself like really counting on these things. So as a kid, the only good part of my childhood were my two cats. Like, I love the cats. I had one named Kitty who would respond to her name and would climb the fence over the school I'd play in next door, and really smart cat, do a lot of funny dog-like things, like wired like a dog, like knew the name, would answer you, you know, if you said kitty, like meow, like it was funny. And so I found myself saying goodbye to Kevin the cat, like the little kitten, like by the front door, and I found myself,
It was your rosebud.
I held it together, but everyone else was like, yeah, this is the cat we bought 3 days ago. And I was like, you're leaving. You're not part of my life anymore, little kitten. Safe travels.
Hold it back.
I haven't had a cat since I was 15. No, I haven't had a cat since I took Kitty to be put down at like age 18 and a half. I was living in a goddamn garage. The place where I took him to the vet to put the cat down was directly across the street from the North Hollywood Fire Department, the one that told me there was a 9-year waiting list for me to be a fireman. And I remember just like walking home with this being like, blah. Like, I want to kill myself. Yeah. So I had this little visceral reaction, sort of like anyone who's played a ton of football, they ever smell fresh cut grass, like a mowed lawn, and they'll have a weird two-a-day. Yeah. You'll be down on your belly, like doing up and downs or push-ups or something. Like, you get this visceral. I did have
like
this.
Baseball infield dirt smells different than regular dirt. And if you're out there playing softball, you're like, oh, it smells like Little League.
Yeah, you know, right. Whatever. You have those thoughts.
And he just kind of went in between your legs and like rubbed his tail on you on his way
out. He would purr hard. And he was sweet and would sleep in his little basket and purr and stuff. He was a little sweetheart. But anyway.
Let it turn to something else.
That's all it is. Let it turn.
Just let it turn to something else, okay?
That's a great Swayze. Do we, God. He do, like, I make fun of those couples that do things that my wife and I would never, ever do. Sort of like Brian and his wife.
Yeah, but the things we do.
One of those things. Yeah,
normal
like,
life.
Like things.
Yeah, things.
But, you see the Swayze, like, documentary stuff. He would dance with his wife just alone in, like,
you
an
better.
empty gym. Like, they would just be dancing. And I'd be like, what? I mean, I thought I had a beef with the people who sat on the same side of the booth when they go out to the restaurant. This is taking it to a whole new level. Doing weird, interpretive, sort of weirdly sexual dance alone with your wife in a barn.
Christy and I did a version of that.
Oh, no. Do you want
to know? It was very sweet, though. It was a few years ago. We went back to the place we got married. They had the remember the barrel room? The big brick room was a very cool room. They had it set up for a wedding the next day, but this was like 9 o'clock on a Friday.
You broke it in.
No, it was open. And it was
in the morning?
9 o'clock p.m. on a Friday. It was set up for a wedding the next day.
The next morning.
So, yeah, so we're in there. It's just us. The place is open. And I took out my phone and I played the song we danced to.
I knew I hated you. I told you. I knew it. I knew you would engage in this behavior with your festive socks.
I know.
I don't want to be.
Was wearing festive socks.
I don't want to be a one upper.
I
don't want to be a one upper. I think it'll be a one sider. Okay. When we go on walks at night, there will be times if it's really dark in that Valley Village area that we will slow dance in the middle of the street with this phone.
Gross! You're on your way.
You. God damn it!
It's sweet. Full moon. Nice part of Valley Village.
We have a little vid to show you, a little cat out in the open space with Phil.
Oh,
this
no.
is nothing better than a kitten and a huge, huge dog who's hell bent on licking the cat.
Aww. Is that kind of a defensive position?
Yeah, the cat's
but she's showing her belly.
Cat's
or
laying
he's
on her back.
Belly. He's okay.
Pawing at Phil. Phil's licking the cat.
Jesus.
Phil will lick anything that comes in front of him.
R-rated.
And
baby.
Wow.
Phil's also a nibbler. Like, if you got to go down on your knees and do some work on some baseboard, he comes up and starts nibbling on your neck and starts licking you and nibbling you.
It's funny, because that cat, if it really disliked it, would run away.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, it's kind of in.
Yeah.
Aww.
Phil's now.
Does he pick him up like a little baby?
And now the cat's out of that. Oh, poor Phil.
All right. Poor Phil's going to miss his buddy.
Aww.
I'll put that up at adamcarolla.com. Also, let's see. We have... So I got sent a little funny clip outro from Between Two Ferns, which is coming out a couple days. Set out the 20th. What is it?
24th, I think.
I think it's the 20th.
Oh, yeah, this Friday. So tomorrow, as you hear this.
Oh.
All right. So as you hear this, it'll come out tomorrow. It was like 11 o'clock at night. He sent me this outtake. Or, you know, during the credits, they run extra whatever. It's Zach Galifianakis talking with David Letterman. And we'll play it for you.
And we had this young woman, heroic young woman, Malala, on the show. And known the world over, not big in North America. Not, you, I can tell by that look that you have no idea what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Who?
Adam Carolla, is that who you said? That's why I have this look on my face.
Wow.
Now,
it's random.
It's funny because there's part of me that goes, oh, hey, I'm on the movie. And then there's part of me that's like, wait a minute, they're making fun of me. And then I'm like, wait a minute, are they making fun of me? And then I'm like, well, I'm in the conversation, aren't I?
You should be on the IMDb page. myself.
That's good.
Yusufzai. Yeah, it's a Pakistani. Not be mistaken for me. I don't know. Am I flattered or am I not flattered?
I think you're flattered.
Absolutely. I'm flattered? Okay. Yeah. It's funny.
You could have said Malia Obama. You know, he has any name that sounds like Malala. Instead of Adam Carolla.
I'd like to believe in your words, Mr. Dances Alone with his wife.
It's a very romantic moment.
Without asking me for permission or how that would make me even feel. And or examining any of the ramifications about it.
Give me your actions.
And then coming over here and just bursting all over me like a fire hose.
Give me a lot to think about.
Yes, you should.
I'll reflect on my actions.
Please reflect. And on a sad note, we have, we had a death of a longtime fan. This is Aaron Doff. It's D-O-P-F.
Aaron the boy or Aaron the girl?
Aaron the boy, and took a picture with him years ago. I think in Atlanta it was. He died of complications of muscular dystrophy. He's a longtime fan that turned his brother Robert onto a Loveline back in the day, and him and his brother lived across the country from each other, but they'd talk about the show over the phone, and lived in many states and turned a lot of people onto the podcast wherever he went, and had a PhD in philosophy. I don't know.
Thoughtful guy.
You have feelings about that.
I most certainly do recently. And sometimes when I hear about guys dying early or having a disease and having to overcome that disease and passing sooner than they should have, it brings me a little solace to know they had a PhD in philosophy. I feel like there's a way for them to contextualize and compartmentalize or sort of put this whole thing into some sort of emotional shape. So, Aaron, you shall be missed, and we'll see you in heaven, brother.
Sorry to
and,
hear it.
And thanks to his brother as well who sent this in. Robert. All right. Let's see. We got R.J. Bell. He's got his picks. We got a Crank Yankers promo.
I know what you with your own stuff. You're super involved with editing and stuff. Are you sitting in any edit bays for Crank Yankers, or it doesn't work that way?
No. This time around, I was involved with doing my own sessions and some minor casting, but not like in the past. What good news is, at some point, you get a little bit older, you end up working with competent people, and then they're allowed to do jobs that you formerly had to sweat over constantly, and kind of get into that phase in our career where John Kimmel, Jimmy's younger brother, who used to just be a kid who couldn't do this, is now in his 40s and can do this, is running the show, and a good guy over there. RJ is on line three. Let me hit him up. RJ Bell.
Mr. Adam, how are you?
Good. You must be feeling pretty good about yourself.
Let me ask you a question. How many kids do you think listen to this show?
Kids meaning under the age of 18?
Let's say 14, 15, 16.
It's just a waste of my time.
At least, they don't listen.
Yeah, I'd say less than 5%. Maybe less than
2%. Considering your audience, thousands and thousands.
It could be thousands and thousands. And yes, I would say this. like secondhand smoke, there's probably secondhand Corolla.
They've been exposed to
they're
it.
Like mama smoking in the Cougar back in the 70s and you sitting in the back seat. There's probably plenty of people driving around
who are getting
the secondhand Adam Carolla show. So, yes, well, thousands.
Now, here's what I'm worried about. First year, won. Second year, won. Third year, undefeated. The kids in the back seat might be thinking, I don't want to go to college.
I'm just
going to be a professional gambler.
That's right. I mean,
are you concerned?
I got to tell you, realistically,
keep me up at night.
When you have, I had a discussion with my son a couple of days ago, and he's like, I would like to talk sports. I would like to do a podcast. You know, these are the kinds of jobs I like to do. And their dad does a podcast, so who am I to say no? Like, if your dad was a cop or school teacher, could he tell you, no, you'll never cut it in the school teaching profession? Like, I'm the wrong guy to say no to. There seems like there's 700 new jobs created every 4 months.
It's a viable career, whereas it wasn't however many years ago.
Right. So sports and prognosticating and all that, I like it, but... have something, you know, I told him. I'd like to say, look, have something to fall back on, like gay porn.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like literally falling back on it. A fallback.
Sure.
A safety cock.
Yeah, safety cock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, RJ, you are, we'll play your intro. Sorry.
It's time for RJ's Parlay. Presented by BetDSI with Vegas insider RJ Bell.
Yeah, so what are we this year? Undefeated?
4-0.
4-0, Brada. What do you like and what do you think? What's coming up? I mean, God, are the Rams going to be able to keep going? I'm always rooting for them. San Diego was an early favorite, but they're 1-1 now. New Orleans, but now he's got a broken hand.
Injuries are catching up to a lot of these teams.
Yeah. What do you think?
Well, first off, I think with the Rams, obviously a nice win. Last week, Drew Brees out, early in that game for the Saints. You know, I think the Rams could be a little overrated right now because there was some skepticism about them early. They won this Saints game, and, you know, people aren't going to really connect, you know, really think too much about Drew Brees being out. By the way, Rams right now a 3-point road favorite against Baker Mayfield and the Browns.
Well, it's kind of hard to say.
Sounds about right.
What's going on? And just when I was saying to my son, first off, again, there's three things that have ruined all of children's sports. There's Odell Beckham's one-handed catch because every one of these 10-year-old yahoos tries to do. I throw the ball to my son. He tries to do the one-hander. I'm like, two hands. And he's like, I couldn't get my other hand over to it. Like, bullshit. Yeah. They all want to do the Odell Beckham catch.
You're a little more Wayne Krabet than Odell Beckham.
Thank you. And, yeah, minus the intestinal fortitude.
Oh, obviously.
Like,
is that not clear?
A super lazy Wayne Krabet. And, like, my son's also often been described as Wayne Krabet with Epstein-Barr virus.
Well, okay. If he got a degree from Hofstra, it'd be pretty good. Let's be honest.
Yeah, no, that'd be the best day of our lives.
So, that's not going to happen. Now, so he tries to do the one-handers, and Steph Curry's ruined the other side, the other sport, which is they all just run. They run down and launch 30-foot three-pointers.
Post them up. What the fuck for?
Yeah, they don't pass. They don't do anything. They all just launch the ball from 35 feet. I'm like, would you stop? You are watching the opposite of what you should be practicing and trying to emulate it. So I was putting a pox on Odell Beckham and explaining he's done in this league. He's gone to Cleveland. He's done. And he had another one-handed. Yeah. By the way, this will now go on to my kid is in his early 40s now with his second one-hand catch. And boy, did he... You forget that guy has wheels. I mean, he caught...
He had like 21 miles an hour on his run. They timed
21 and change. Yeah. Like, he literally caught a slant and took off. And you're like, oh, that brother's fast. Sorry.
Now, I tell you, Adam, is a fascinating narrative this week, story. We've got two gigantic favorites. Patriots favored by 22.5 over the Jets. Cowboys favored, biggest favorite in the history of the Cowboy organization, favored by 21.5 against the Dolphins. Now, if you go back 30 years, prior to this week, there had been five favorites over three touchdowns. And there's two of them this week. Five in 30 years, two wow. this week.
Well, you know, it's I always say this. It's kind of in a weird way. It's kind of like we're talking about UFC. This happens every once in a while. Boxing, it happens every once in a while. You go, well, I'm going to bet 10 grand on Tyson and make $3,300. Mm. That doesn't sound that. It doesn't sound glamorous. It's like, how about just making $3,300 for free because Tyson's going to knock this guy out in the second round. The Patriots are going to win that game 42-6, mm-hmm. and you're going to go, yeah, of course. Yeah. Why didn't I bet? They're going to go into halftime up by 27, and you're going to go, of course.
Of course, that's silly, yeah.
Why didn't I make that bet? Mm. Yes.
There might be a surprise coming up in the parlay.
Uh-oh. Let's hear it, RJ.
All right, so first off, it's kind of interesting. You said if you do want to bet the Pats just to win the game, you can bet $26 to win $1.
Right, that's my Mike Tyson in the 80s bet. But on the other hand, if you can afford 50 grand, it'll be the easiest $2,000 you ever made in your life.
Hey, Brian, did you notice how he said the 80s the second time because my Buster Douglas line was coming?
Oh, I mean, yeah.
He kind of had an instinct.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to say anything.
Yeah. Sorry.
All right. You guys ready? Here we go. I'm going to do something a little different. I think the audience is ready. We are going with a side and total in the same game. In NFL, anyone can bet totals. You know, if you can bet sides, you can bet totals. And, oh, by the way, this is what we call a correlated parlay.
Mm-hmm.
And what does that mean? If one happens, the second one has a better chance of happening.
Mm-hmm.
The New York Jets plus 22.5.
I love that bet.
And here's why. If you look at it, last week everyone saw Belichick just run up the score against Miami. Now, why did he do that? Because he's known not to do that. One, Miami had won 5 of 6 against New England. Imagine that.
Right.
And number two, everyone thought Antonio Brown and the distraction, and Belichick hates nothing more than the sense there's a distraction. He wanted to show there was no distraction.
Right.
If they win Adam big again like this, you know, like they did last week, he's going to worry about the team getting a little cocky, getting to, you know, conversation about is this one of the best teams of the century. I got a feeling they get a lead and sit on the ball. And, oh, by the way, that's why we like the under here. And it's under 44 in the game. And that's called a correlation. Whereas, imagine if it's a low-scoring game. Mm-hmm. Obviously, being plus 22.5 gets much, 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 much more attractive.
Mm-hmm.
So, correlated parlay, plus 23 on the Jets, under 44 in the same game.
So, you feel that while the Pats could run it up, they're not in this particular game.
Well, this is interesting. Four times in these games, and let me pull the numbers up right now, the Belichick's been over a 20-point favorite in his career, 0-4 against the spread. That's a small sample size,
mm-hmm.
but when he's got a game that's all-time historic mismatch, he doesn't tend to run it up.
Can you give me this answer, or is it just Tom Brady? I always wonder when Belichick is up by 19 points with 4 minutes left in the game. He has a 42-year-old quarterback in there who you're definitely going to be using him in the postseason. Mm-hmm. Don't want to get some reps for the kid on the bench, whoever's backing up Brady. Like, just get some snaps.
Yeah.
Tom Brady's in his 40s. He could go down. How valuable would these reps be to the guys on the bench? You're up by 3 touchdowns. Give him a few snaps. Why don't they ever do that? Is that Brady's decision?
Great question. First off, you might recall how Tom Brady got the job, right?
Bledsoe. Sure.
Getting hurt. So, to me, by all accounts, and these are, you know, written accounts, so not personal knowledge, but things I've read, Brady doesn't want to mentor anyone. To him, it's a competition. And that's why Jimmy G, if you remember, was sent out of town. You know, Belichick, it was the one time that the owner, Kraft, came down and vetoed. Belichick said, you got to trade him. Brady doesn't like him, you know, Garoppolo behind him. So I think part of it's Brady, but there's an old saying that the Pats have. It's you get better at football playing football. And they've really never been a team to not play in the preseason, you know, with their starters, and they've never been a team to pull guys. So, again, in my opinion, whenever there's a question about football, what would Belichick do? Mm. The fact that we know what he would do here, I'm going to accept it as correct.
Also, to Adam's point, if you watch the games that he's talking about where they're up by a couple touchdowns or it's the, like, why is he still in there? They're putting Brady in very, very, very low-risk positions. Hand the ball off. He's throwing quick. You know what I mean? Like, he's not dropping back. And
I saw him drop and chuck a few last week. I mean, he's playing a crappy team.
Right.
They feel safe. But I don't know, but I think Brady is a stats guy. And I think every yard he gets from scrimmage, every touchdown, every passing yard, everything gets him to be goatier and goatier and goatier. And it's all, and I get it. I mean, I would probably be thinking the same way. Like, every time you complete a 10-yard slant, the guy takes it up the field for 25, that's 25 more on your total.
Yeah,
whatever.
I'm gonna do what I do best and shit on your point. RJ, just tell me what you think about this. Brady's greatness is defined solely by rings. Like, except for the one year he had Randy Moss, he doesn't let it the scoreboard. He'll always be statistically inferior to Peyton Manning. He'll always be statistically inferior to Dan Marino. His greatness he defines through championships.
Well, he set a touchdown record for
right. There was
a
one season where he lit it up because Randy Moss was there. But I don't think.
He had a guy who could light it up for him, and he did.
Right.
You know what I mean? He took the opportunity.
My assumption is he doesn't care that much about stats. But
well,
RJ,
I would agree that stats are secondary, though I think everyone cares, you know, to some degree cares. There's one last point, and this is really a quick sign. I'll make a quick of Belichick's genius. So this is something Tony Romo talked about last year. So what's happening now is everyone has their databases, and every play is tagged. So right now, guys, imagine you could go in and say, okay, we're scouting the Patriots. You know, it's another team. Let's see all the times that they are third down and goal to goal, 5 yards or less to go for the touchdown. And let's look at the plays. And you see boom, 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 boom. And then they get tendencies, which is, oh, they run 4 times here, they pass 2 times, whatever it is. When Belichick has a big lead, what he'll do is dirty the stats. He'll do things that he would never typically do.
So he can't
set a
pattern.
And now the teams are not grading each play to say, is this representative? They're just looking at the numbers. And what is happening is he's getting running plays in spots where he would only pass or vice versa. He's doing long passes when he would only do short. And he'd rather have Brady in there doing it to dirty up the stats of the other team.
Yeah. This is like about every 8th time I come home, I enter through an open window.
Dirty those stats.
Trying to keep everybody off balance. All right, thanks.
That was good.
Thanks, RJ. We appreciate it, Brada.
Hey, it's my pleasure, guys. Have a good week.
I'd be curious. We got an outro.
We do. Here it is. RJ's Parlay. Presented by BetDSI.
I haven't really thought about it because, yeah, I agree with you. Super Bowl rings is sort of the ultimate testament
for him,
for quarterback. But I sort of think he'd like everything. I think he'd like Super Bowl rings and most passing yards from scrimmage or whatever. Max Zapata, he must be in the neighborhood of a lot of these guys because simply through the virtue of the fact that he's on his 18th year and these guys played 13 years or, you know,
these are passing yards on your screen.
These are, Drew Brees is number one with almost 75,000. 72,000 is Peyton Manning. Brett Favre is almost at 72,000. And Brady's closer to 71,000. But he's right within striking distance. And I think at the end he wants to go, I'm married a supermodel. I got 8 Super Bowl rings, and I lead statistically in everything. And you're going to go, oh, Belichick, Belichick,
sure,
Belichick.
Sure.
I'm going to show you who has the most yards. I'd be curious. Touchdowns. What else is there for quarterbacks? Now,
touchdowns, maybe passer rating is a good, you know, one-to-one example.
Right.
It's not dependent on, you can accumulate a lot of yards over a long career, but like, you know, if you have the rating.
Bet DSI, RJ's Parlays. Well, we just heard it. Great time of the year. Beautiful weather. Football's right on us now. Add a little excitement over at BetDSI.com, your betting partner. Use BetDSI as a live betting platform. Watch all the events and bet games until the final whistle. New members get a 100% bonus match with the promo code Adam101. That's double your money. Paying winners for 20 years, top-rated on review sites, user-friendly interface and mobile site, fastest payouts in the industry. NFL, NBA, NHL, boxing, politics, reality TV, esports.
Ooh, that's right. Politics, futures. To take out Mike Murphy's advice and put a little money on Buttigieg or Cory Booker.
You did ask specifically.
They're long shots at this point.
BetDSI.com, promo code Adam101 for a limited time 100% bonus offer. And it's best game of town. It's BetDSI. All right.
I forgot to mention this. RJ was on the line. Tell me what you think about this. I saw a prop bet today on the NFL futures. It said, will the Patriots shut out another opponent? What odds would you give that?
Will they shut out another opponent in the regular
season? Yeah, the season.
Could it include the playoffs?
I suppose. I'm guessing it's regular season. The rules
right,
always favor the
let's say regular
house.
Season. Yeah. All right.
Shutouts are fairly rare in the NFL.
Fairly rare. It seems like an 8-1 or something like that.
Yeah, it's 5-1. I took
five
it.
Five popped in my head
initially,
I took
it because the Patriots have a very good defense, and they play Miami again at home.
Right. So yes, could easily happen again. Fourth in passer rating at 97.8, tied for second with Drew Brees and TD passes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it's getting up there.
He's racking up the stats.
All right. Stick around. He's going to be on top of everything. All right. We have a... Chris took, we're going to be, let's see, is that tomorrow? Yeah, tomorrow afternoon, we'll be in Lexington, Kentucky, doing a live pod.
Happy hour
over
show.
There. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Comedy Off Broadway. Couple tickets left. I think we're pretty well sold, but there might be a couple tickets left. Max Zapata pulled a little unprepared video clip, and this one wasn't based. What kind of setup does it need, Max Zapata?
Oh, well, you're on stage with Casey, your ball puller, and there's a hopper malfunction. One of the balls came out of the hopper into the audience.
In Portland.
Sorry, Casey. This is the late night drunk crowd. Let's see what we can do better. Pull out another. This guy caught one. And by the way, you caught that like a pro, my friend. Hold on. I remember you from that bar in Thailand. I fucking never forget a face. You were sitting right up against the stage just catching all those fucking bing bong. Did you know this about this dude?
Probably point his
what?
Wife.
What? First date? Oh, this fucking dude's all over Thailand, man. Yeah, fucking, I mean, there'd be ping pong balls flying out of those chicks' cooches. This guy'd go up like Willie Mays. I saw him doing over the shoulder once, man. This chick fired off a ping pong ball from her snatch. This guy got up and fucking laid out. Then in one motion, just turned around and fired it at the DJ. Runner fucking had to go back to second base. Like, he couldn't even tag. This guy's a fucking got a cannon for an arm. First date, love this guy, man. He fucking, and it's like, he's every bar I've been in Thailand that had a chick that shot ping pong balls out of her pussy, he was there. Yeah. Now, he always left with a young lad, but he'd be there at the bar. Anyway, enjoy your first date.
Wow. Gift from heaven, that guy's catch. That was awesome.
Gift from heaven. Yeah, ping pong ball shot out of the hopper, and I think the guy just one-handed it real quick.
That's great.
I would reckon, as I think about baseball stadiums, I think the guys who do the one-handed catches out in the bleachers while holding the beer have as high a catching percentage as the guys with the mitt. The guys with the mitt muff they seem to muff more than the guy with the one hand. Yeah. I think there's too much anticipation, or they're too nervous, or they've been thinking. The other guy's got a three beer buzz, and he just puts his hand up.
The guy with the mitt has been planning on catching a ball for at least all day, if not his whole
life. He's got too much time to think while that ball's in the air. All right, Rob Schneider is out there. Rob, do you have some of those tweets, Rob?
I do, yeah.
Was talking about with Shane Gillis.
Yeah.
So he was kind of, as a perspective of someone who's done a few characters on SNL, and the guy getting booted from SNL. So we will take ourselves, what do we got? We got a little Crank Yanker promo.
Yeah, they just posted something on Instagram, all Burcham. So we can watch a little bit of this, too, just see what Burcham looks like.
Do I sound like some kind of jackass who get on the phone and waste your time for a laugh? I may catch him while I'm on hold. I got one speed, lightning.
Oh, well, you think he can bag one of those suckers?
I damn well know I can. I tried to solve it with words, but the only word that could solve it was one called ki-hi.
Yeah, I don't play by the book either, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
I'm such an outlaw, I don't even play by my own rules.
Lady Bic was my weapon of choice, and I gave her the Eagle Claw.
Third tour I was in there, I heard the Purple Heart, twisted my ankle pretty bad. Got a high ankle sprain. Very painful. Very painful. Hi, right, buddy.
Okay.
Never forget.
All right.
Shannon?
Yep.
That's a chick's name.
I know.
Celebrating Mr. Burcham.
I had some crazy calls. I don't even know if this air, but like, I had one call. I called this like trampoline world or something. And the guy picked up the phone and he was like, I could kind of tell he was an ex-jock who's now working at Trampoline World, like helping kids who've got their foot caught in a spring or something. And I was like, I was yelling at him. I was like, I wanted him to like reclaim his glory. Like, you work at a Trampoline World. You should be doing 2 days right now. You should be playing arena ball. You know, you got to be. And I saw you play in high school. You're out there playing corner, out on an island, shut down, lockdown corner. Number 8 on the jersey, 8 ball painted on the towel hanging in front of you. And the guy goes, I was number 8.
Wow.
I was like, it's a bizarre defensive back number.
Yeah, that's a not common.
Rare number. And so.
Did it throw you?
Well, once he.
Huh? What?
Then he did think I went and watched him in high school because I called that's out right. his jersey number.
Obsessed.
Wow. He did not.
You're like Madame Cleo.
I had this weird flashback to a dude I played, Michael Odom. Guy with a big afro who I played football with.
Balak!
Schneider, easy. Mike Odom. And Mike Odom played safety or cornerback for our team. And he was...
Nega, I assume.
Was
Brian, easy. Please,
Gina,
come on.
He was number...
Whole story.
He was number 8. And he had an 8 ball on
That's
his
good.
Towel.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, if you could take a Sharpie and make a cool 8 ball on your towel That's and then sweet. Hang the towel in front of you with the number 8 on it.
That's all you need.
That's cool. So he's number 8 and he had the 8 ball. And somehow when I was riffing, I just pictured Michael Odom with his 8 ball.
That's pretty good.
And it's such a low percentage number for a guy. I mean, I don't know what's a higher percentage, but I don't know if there's any. Well, there's no DB in the NFL with number 8.
Yeah.
There's no
and even
people
in college, you know, it's just not a common number for a defensive player.
Freak the guy out. Anyway, also, I think I called a horse track, and I was like, I want to buy some horse meat and eat some horse meat. And the guy's like, I can't sell it. I was like, what, the horse breaks its leg, you put him down, you know, you give me the horse meat. You know, I'll buy the horse meat. And he's like, no, I'm not going to sell you the horse meat. I'm like, have you ever eaten horse? And the guy's like, yeah. I'm like, what? You have? He's like, yeah.
You know
how delicious it is.
I'm not selling it to you.
And the guy was like, I'm not going to sell it to you. And I was like, if you don't sell me that horse meat, I'm going to go down to the track and I'm going to tell your boss you eat horses. And you're going to get fired. It was a weird coinkydink, right?
It was great.
Okay, found gold.
All right. We'll bring Rob Schneider in a second. First, stand-up with Chris DeStefano. Comedy Central has your new favorite podcast, Stand Up with Chris DeStefano, every week. Chris and his producer discuss some of the greatest stand-ups of all time, classic bits, stuff from Comedy Central's libraries, and jokes from today's hottest comedians, and they'll unpack all the favorite bits, discuss the comedy scene, call other comedians as well, and generally get into everything comedy. God, there's so much news about comedians, you know? I mean, there's like weird Louis C.K. news, and there's weird Kevin Hart news. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a weird roast talk, and this guy's getting suspended, and that guy's getting the plug pulled, and then this guy's getting a new special. It's kind of a renaissance. So why not? They cover it all. They're recorded at Comedy Central's headquarters in New York, and you never know who might drop in. Subscribe and listen to new episodes of Stand Up with Chris DiStefano. That is every Thursday, or wherever you listen to podcasts. All right, let's take a break. Rob Schneider coming in next. Hey, it's Adam Carolla. You may know him from putting his body on the line in Jackass, but now Johnny Knoxville is bringing you the wildest stories from the bravest folks he knows on his newest podcast, Pretty Sure I Can Fly. With his co-host, Elna Baker, they have incredible firsthand accounts from folks who surfed 100-foot waves, ride 600 miles per hour in a rocket sled, and wrestle crocodiles just for fun. They've been talking with brave souls who throw caution to the wind and push the boundaries of what humans are capable of. Or, as Johnny would say, they're talking to people who have more balls than a bowling alley. I'm Pretty Sure I Can Fly. Johnny and Elna bring you personal stories from unsung heroes that are part comedy, part adrenaline, and all heart. These are the inspirational, hold my beer stories that will make you want to grab the bull by the horns, literally and figuratively. Follow Pretty Sure I Can Fly on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcast. You can listen to Pretty Sure I Can Fly right now, early and free, right now on Wondery Plus.
It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Ace Man, hey, had a dream last night that Adam Carolla had donned the orange apron and was working the hardware department of the local Home Depot, servicing customers' questions. And then I walked back to the receiving area of Home Depot, and Adam had set up a boxing gym, and he was teaching young Latino and black men boxing. That's when I woke up, and I had quite a boner. Thank you.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
My frequent Home Depot joke, which isn't even really a joke, is I spend so much time in Home Depot that people do come up to me and they go, excuse me, I'm looking for plumbing couplers. And I go, I don't work here. And they go, oh, sorry. And then I go, it's aisle 11 on the middle shelf. So, like, I do know where everything is anyway.
Yeah.
Rob Schneider here.
You're always working on new stuff. I was asking you, I said, I always knew you had a new project. I always loved the one thing I never, it's like you create stuff like in the house most people never think about, and you could decorate things. The thing that was blew me away was like you actually decorated and painted, and why wouldn't you? The washing machines and dryer.
No, I did the refrigerator, stove, oven, and all the appliances in my kitchen. I had them all painted.
Yeah.
Like all the stainless steel stuff.
Why wouldn't you? I mean, make it more beautiful.
Well, everybody, just use your brain here for a second. So here's how you can do it. They go, you can look at the house. Oh, and the microwave. I had to take the door off the microwave and and everything. And so here's how it works. You go in to buy like appliances. Oh, and the dishwasher and everything too. Yeah, the microwave and everything too. You go in to buy an oven. And it's a nice oven, like a Viking oven.
Yeah.
And they'll have a couple of colors of like eggplant or white or blue. Or bacon. And then you go, oh, that's cool. Where's the fridge that matches that? And they go, well, they don't have that. They got this. And they go,
white or silver.
Why don't they have a fridge that's something that matches the whatever? And then what about the dishwasher? And they go, no, not the dishwasher, just this one, just the oven and the cooktop or whatever. And you go, but what if they were all the same color? And they're like, they don't make that. So I said, yeah, I'll get everything in stainless steel, and then I'll have it painted. And then they said, this is everyone, how durable is that going to be? And I said, you ever see a DeLorean that's painted red? And they said, I think I've seen a painted DeLorean. I said, well, that's a stainless steel car. Yeah. They paint them. Yeah. So how much punishment does the hood of a DeLorean take when you park it in Van Nuys at the Costco in the summertime with birds flying over it, like, versus my refrigerator door? It's got handles.
Yeah. It's inside.
It's inside. If you can paint a stainless steel car, then you can paint. And they're like, what about the oven? What about the temp? What about the temp? I said, same car sitting in Van Nuys.
Engines are pretty hot.
The hood of that car versus the outside of the oven. You can't make it so hot that your kid's hands
blister.
Would blister if they touch it. So I said, we're done. Painted everything.
Fine.
Waxed it with car wax. Is durable as shit.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, but I like the creativeness about it. And you know, just and you discover things. I like the guy. I knew you'd be working on something. So you're working on the house, the movie theater.
I just built my movie theater in my house. I didn't know anything about building movie theaters, but I built the riser and I, you know, got
the chairs.
You figure
it out. You're not intimidated. Most guys are intimidated by stuff like that.
Max, Pat, I think there's some theater pictures in my phone, by the way. I wasn't planning on getting into this, but I've taken a few pictures. Here's the thing, everybody, that I keep trying to kind of explain, which is if you get really good at cooking Italian food, that will help you cook Japanese food. And if you master two instruments, that'll help with the third. And if you speak three languages, that'll help with the fourth. Fucking dummy, start learning shit.
I know.
Start doing things.
I was always intimidated. It was cooking and stuff. So I started, and I said, what's the thing I really like to cook? It seems really complicated. So I cooked Peking duck.
Oh, really?
It was like a 2-day thing. But like, and you understand why it takes so long. And the surprising thing is like, you learn stuff. It's like, because duck is tough. If you just try to like, you know, you take it out and barbecue and you can't eat it, you know?
Right.
But they steam it for an hour.
Right.
That's, these Chinese people are geniuses with duck. It's like, wow, it's a really tough animal. It's like, and then like, you realize that the fun part of the duck is like, where's the meat? There's not a lot of meat. It's like, it's a duck. You know, it's not like, it's not bread to
little
be
medallions.
Like. Little medallion. Yeah, it's a little tiny piece of meat. That's all you get. Mm-hmm. And I was like, where's the rest of it? Because we're used to this chicken, this gigantic fattened thing that's not normal. Not in nature. And so the thing about it's the skin and a little bit of meat, and that's it. And that's all you get. So I didn't realize that. But the thing that was incredible about the duck was that they steam it for an hour, and you have to let it sit overnight or at least for 2 hours with all the spices in it. And the real key spice to it, which gives the flavor you would never think of, nutmeg.
Really?
Yeah, so that
wouldn't
was
have thought about that.
The silent hero, nutmeg, in so many dishes.
Yeah, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So anyway, and then you have to like, and so you steam it for an hour, and then you put it in the oven for like 350, and then you cook the hell out of it, like 500 for like 5 minutes, so you get the crisp skin, and it came out great. And we're like, you know, I was intimidated, but the thing my wife says, you know, make sure and follow the directions. My wife's really good. Make sure and follow the directions, because you've never followed the directions. You can't, because I don't like to follow the directions. That doesn't make sense. It's steaming for an hour, but I really did. This is like the one time I said I'm going to do exactly what it said, and it came out good. So I was impressed, and it's like, okay, now I can do something else.
I feel like way too many people are running from these experiences. Because we've decided that somehow success means farming everything out. So we're doing this thing where it's like, you're successful, right? So you don't need to mow your own lawn and you don't need to skim your own pool. And I kind of go, yeah, I agree. I'm busy. But it doesn't mean you don't have to do your own everything. It's just certain things. Start exploring those other things. And when you get good at design and sort of engineering and building, and you sort of see things kind of three-dimensionally, then when it comes time to build a movie theater, which I have never built, you then have a process.
Yeah.
And the process is not a process of building a movie theater. It's just an overall process of like, all right, how do we approach this? And you start using all the tools that you've sort of sharpened in your brain from all the other experiences.
The difference being that if I make a Peking duck and it doesn't come out that good, we throw it away. We just order, go get a pizza. If you screw up one room in your house, you got to hire some guy to come in and fix it.
Yeah, I thought it was I there's a lot of sort of science
to
it.
Holy shit.
Oh, we're looking at a picture now.
It's coming together.
Is that your place?
Yeah, it's got the leather seats. I built the riser. I put like a dark color carpet down. I put a blue on the ground and a charcoal on the riser. And then the walls are covered in material. So the, what you do with the walls is you put the speakers in the walls. Then you put 1-inch jean or cotton batting. And then you run 1-inch track all the way around it that has a little seam in it, and you take the acoustic material and you tuck it in, and it sucks it in. So
and
the
you
walls.
Got somebody, you got somebody's going to do the Dolby test for you?
Oh, no. But I am going to get Ella Fitzgerald in there to scat and see if she can break my wine glass.
Yeah, but that's cool, man.
It's
you're going to use a room like that.
Listen, I was the wall that has that's opening is where the screen is going to go. It's going to be like a 12-foot screen. Look,
I was hoping you're going to put a screen in there. It seems like you're doing a lot of work with that screen.
My
went a long way in to fit six people or eight people facing one direction.
My daughter had I went down there, I don't know, a week ago. My daughter had thrown a little slumber party with her friends, and they'd all stayed down there. And I was like, good, use it. Like, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
And there is a slightly different feeling.
It's a good thing.
Yeah. Of eating Peking duck that you make yourself versus something that Grubhub brought to your house, and there's a slightly different feeling every time you enter a room that you have done. Well, it could be a bedroom, it could be a bathroom, it could be a theater, it could be a hallway. Like when you enter it, you go, "I did this." Now you don't lavish in it. I don't roll around on the floor.
Don't be delusional. In it. I'm not going to think my Peking duck is like it's good if it ain't. You know, just like your room, you can't. It sounds perfect if it doesn't.
Right.
You got to be realistic.
But you when you enter it, you get a little sense.
I did that.
Of, like, I had some guys in from the UK, or they were in from the UK. I didn't have them in. They're doing one of those woodworking shows, but it's like the Great Bake Off or whatever they do over there. That's all big stuff over there. They're doing like a woodworking one of those. And at some point, they're like, they want to come by and like check it out. And they came by because they're talking to me about woodworking. And when I put them in the studio, I said, yeah, I made the console. And they went, oh, yeah, good. And I went, yeah, good. It felt good.
Yeah.
And it also feels like you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And the studio and the whole place. There's a satisfaction to it.
Absolutely. Every single time a new guest comes in here, they love to take it in. And then when they hear you did it, then we talk about that.
They're like, what's the catch?
I do think it's an experience that people shouldn't run from.
I like that description of it, because you're not forcing you to do it. Just don't avoid it. Try to do it and enhance your life, or don't be intimidated by stuff.
Well, you know, my new basic thought is, as we know, because of technology, because everyone has a car and all the fresh, clean water comes right out of the tap and everything, we invented a gym and a treadmill. Like, society went, I was saying to Dr. Drew, how many gyms were there in the 50s, like in the United States? 14, all Jack LaLanne or something. There's Arthur Murray dance studios. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? There's a Pilates and a SoulCycle on every corner now. Yep. Because, all right, we need it. We're not moving.
There's a great picture of like Charlie Chaplin in 1920 when he went to England, and there's like 10,000 people went to greet him, and that's the superstar of superstars at that time. And not one fat guy in that audience at 10,000 people.
Right.
These people worked. They had physical labor.
Yeah, you work. You were up on your feet. You burnt calories. You weren't eating a bunch of GMOs and blah, blah, blah. Okay. So now everyone has signed off on the fact that you need to exercise. I say, fine. Psychologically, you need to go in the kitchen and make scones with your mom. And the boys need to go out to the garage and make a birdhouse with dad, or build a treehouse in the back. Like, that's our psychological. Yeah. That's what we need to do. In an age of Twitter and Trump and everything else, and Al-Qaeda and ISIS, you got to get out in the garage and clear your head. Or go in the kitchen and clear your head. It's the exact same thing. And you can get better scones from Grubhub. Just don't do it.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
I really respect my wife, Patricia, because she literally said, I don't know how to make these cakes, but I want to know exactly what we're making for the kids for their birthday party. So she went to chef school.
And oh, my God.
Like, she had to, like, clean. She said, like, the worst part of the you after it's you have to stay till, like, 10 in at night. And then after you get to clean the whole kitchen up after the chef leaves and ever. But she did it. She learned just enough. And said, that's it. I quit. I know how to make cakes now. I don't do this anymore. It was great. And she makes these beautiful cakes.
That's
don't
cool.
you guys?
Right.
Isn't it, Drew's not impressed. Isn't it a turn on when you meet someone and they go, I wanted to know more about this, so I taught myself how to do it, or I did it. You know what I mean?
It says a lot about them in every area.
Imagine when I was dating Christy, I found out she was an amazing cook. Yes. Like, this is fantastic.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't like to figure out stuff that like, there's like this one meal. This is my favorite restaurant, Cafe Sport in San Francisco. There's this one guy, the chef was Antonio Latona, and he used to say his English was terrible. You know those English, you know those Italians who are, the longer they're in America, their English gets worse. After, and it's like, as a friend Luciano, I said, in 5 years, we're not going to be able to understand him anymore. Right. It's just getting worse and worse. And so this guy, Antonio Latona, he said, it's a dish, Antonio Latona, the pasta, scampi, Antonio. He calls it after himself.
Sure.
Shrimp Antonio, basically. Right. Scampi Antonio, a dish only Latona can make. And literally, the guy, he's passed away now because of this dish, because he had like, you know, he had like quadruple bypass. There's so much olive oil in this thing. And so the guy who took over, McKaylee, he's the other guy. And his job security is, everybody knows the ingredients, but they don't know the exact proportions of it. Mm-hmm. So we all know the ingredients. And sometimes you try to cook it, and sometimes it comes out good. Sometimes it doesn't come out good. And like, he literally, for 30 years now, that McKaylee, who's taken over, doesn't let anybody in the kitchen when he's making that one dish, because that's the most popular dish, and it's in Cafe Sport in San Francisco. It's a scampi dish, and we know what it is. It's got olive oil in it, but not extra virgin olive oil. Has too much. It's too strong. So it's regular virgin olive oil, which is still kind of hard to get. Regular virgin olive oil, and then it has eggs, and it has like raw garlic, which is what is the real spice to it, like 3 or 4 raw garlics, and then it has lemon juice, yeah. Right? And you have to mix the oil slowly, otherwise it separates, right? And the magic ingredient, I hate to give it away.
Love.
Capers. Spanish capers.
Do it.
Spanish capers. It's unbelievable.
The nutmeg of round thing. Oh, no, wait a minute. Nutmeg's round.
But you'll never be able to make it perfectly like they do. And like McKaylee, we all know what the ingredients are, but only he knows the exact proportion.
I will tell you guys that Rob is doing stand-up Comedy Zone in Jacksonville, Florida. That's tomorrow as you hear this, and Saturday, and actually more dates available on his website, robschneider.com. I'll tell you about that in a second. First, let me hit Castrol Edge. Stronger under pressure. Engines can lose up to 10% of performance due to friction. Castrol Edge with fluid titanium transforms under pressure to keep the metal apart and rubbing and robbing 3 times.
Right.
Oh, come on, Drew. 3 times stronger than leading full synthetic against viscosity breakdown. It's the edge. It's Castrol Edge. Let's see, Rob. So
yes,
we were
sir.
Talking a little earlier about, I don't have everyone's name. What's the comedian's name?
I don't even know.
Oh, Shane Gillis.
Shane Gillis.
Yes.
And
yes.
All the. I think we all.
I think every comedian would never root for another comedian to get fired, you know, for anything. And look, what he said was not on the show he got hired for. I just think he's a guy, Saturday Night Live guy, who got fired. And I don't know the guy. I've never seen him work. I saw the podcast that they talked about. Where he said, and you know, it's like I did see it, and like I said, he got fired for that, and he didn't do any. This is before he was hired on Saturday Night Live, and I saw that, and he truthfully, it was like, you know, it was like I tried to imagine, because he was. I said, please go for a joke. It was like watching. It's like being a pilot watching another pilot go down and go pull up, pull up, come on, man, pull up.
Right.
And it just didn't go for a joke, and it just was insensitive, and
I just kind of riffing, didn't even get anywhere.
Yeah. But and he said some racial slurs, and then so this came up, and he got fired over this after he got hired. And my attitude is like, hey, you know, you can't give in to the mob,
right?
You can't give in to this mob of this Twitter mob thing, and then this is their big victory. And then if you do give in to it, that's not the comedy audience you want. That's who you want to please. That's your comedy audience.
Also, the mob moves on in a hot second. Like
to the next
mob
victim.
Like what they'll do is they'll go. I don't know. Was it Virginia? I can't remember where, but
Ralph Northup.
Yeah, I think, or whatever. They found a picture of a guy, and he was in a Klansman, and the other guy was in blackface. And then he was like, that's me, but I don't remember. But no, I'm not the blackface guy, but I'm not the Klansman. And it was misput on or whatever. And they went, we're going to go to the next guy. And the next guy had sexual assault allegations or whatever. Like the guy, like he was at bat, and whoever was on deck was doing having in their own stew. And then it went back and forth for like 4 days. And then people were like, ah, fuck it, moving on. Because someone else will say something stupid, or they'll find another picture.
Noam Chomsky talked about that in the 80s. Like this it's like in the you know, the manufacture of consent. It's like a wrecking ball that's just rolling, crushing things, and never goes back and see what it just destroyed because it's moved on.
Right. It's basically my dog Phil does heinous things. It takes my cream off the countertop, eats the kids' chewable vitamins and whatever, and there's a window for punishment. I was with my...
Because they won't remember, right?
I was with my nanny last night in the kitchen. I was like, Phil, this morning, took the whole goddamn cream thing, spilled it all over the floor and whatever. And she's like, did you beat him with the... She wants me to beat him with the newspaper. She made a weapon out of newspaper. She literally sculpted a weapon.
That's good. And she shillelagh.
It's really literally shillelagh. She's like, did you beat him? And it's funny. I'm like apologizing. I'm like, hear me out.
Don't beat me.
You're
cowering.
Put the penny saver down. Hear me out. I didn't have a chance to beat him because he got up and he was covered with cream and he took off down the hall and he was dragging. You need to discipline him or he's going to do it again. I go, I know. But now we're both having this conversation in front of Phil. But the window's closed.
Right. He doesn't even know if you hit him now, he's going to go, hey, what's up with him?
So I'm saying when you get embroiled in this controversy, whether it's firing you from SNL or whether you're the governor of Virginia, wait it out a couple days and we just go right.
I know. I felt like
what happened to all the outrage about blackface and Klansmen? We don't even care. We just move on to the next guy.
Like, and you know, a friend of mine was pointing out, like, Olympic athlete, you know, you get like, it's not just one shot. You don't just get one, you know, hop, skip, and jump. Yeah, it's the best of three, right?
Right.
You get a shot at it. They don't just get rid of it. What is unforgivable? That's it. And that's there's just this sense of like, that's it. He's out forever. You know?
Again, if you are Lorne Michaels, you just got to deal with it for about a 48-hour news cycle, and then someone else will do something.
I think it's a mistake because you really have like a 45-year, you know, it really has become like this institution. You know, that Saturday Night Live. And I really feel like it's a mistake to, like, you know, to give in to that mob. You know, because they could have ridden it out. Or they could have given him a suspension and try to please some people. And the real assholes are never going to please anyway.
Right. And what they're doing, and what they don't realize they're doing, is comedians have no control or jurisdiction over anybody at any time. They're by nature comedians. Like, they're like musicians, you know what I mean? They're people in our society. There's politicians, there's cops, there's school bus drivers, where it's like, hey, we need this person to be sober and not have a long criminal history.
Measured.
Temperate. And if we find out that the person, well, I'll give you an example.
We need comedians to be loose cannons.
Drugs.
Yes, sir.
How many comedians have had their bouts with drugs?
It's got to be one or two.
A couple.
Yeah.
I mean, their psyches are already a little off.
They're drugs. Yeah. They're tons of drugs, but they don't drive school buses. So you give them a pass because you go, we don't like drugs as a society, and we don't wish that people take drugs. But these guys go out on stage at 10:45 at night with a drink in their hand and tell off-color jokes. And the other ones are swinging by your house and picking your kid up at 7 in the morning. So we have a little different relationship with drugs as it pertains to comedians versus cops, versus school bus, versus
pilots.
Yeah. We have a very different relationship. What would you rather, your comedian do drugs or your pilot do drugs? So if that's what we've established, then I think we can apply that to just about anything. Yeah. And would you like your kid's counselor at school going on a racially laced tirade or something? I would, but I'm in the minority.
However,
if it's a comedian, again, what are we really asking for them to do? And how much impact are they having on our life?
To me, and the thing is, because my friend called me, he's a really lovely comedian friend of mine from Houston. He's like Sun Phan, who's a Vietnamese comedian. And he brought up a good point because he said, you know what? He said, I was disappointed that you defended him. And I said, I said, why? I said, I have to defend. I mean, if I make a mistake in defending a comedian's right to make a mistake or say something horrible, I'd rather make that a mistake. And he just said, well, how much more can Asians take? I mean, if you're going to say, what if he would have said, you know, instead of saying, calling a Chinese slur, if he would have said the N-word, would you have defended him? And I said, that's an interesting point, you know, and I just feel like, you know, like with Asians, I mean, truthfully, and I said, Asians are the last people you can be, and I think I mentioned this before, the last people you can be racist against. I mean, truthfully, right. Harvard University has set a limit on the number of Asians at the university. So you know what? If we just,
I know.
If
it's purely,
they're selling too much. We can't have that.
The sun is setting on fat asses. Used to be fat people who were open game, too.
If it's just academically, then it's going to be nothing but Asian people in Harvard. So they said, we have to have a limit. And people are, there's no, you try to put a limit on women, on gays, on, at the university, they're going to burn that university down. But everybody's like, oh, the limit on Asians, that's all right. They're going to be fine. They're Asian.
Right.
They're going to, when Asian, you know, you never see homeless Asians in America.
They're statistically the minority. I mean, in terms of like, you know, we look at black and Hispanic as minority groups struggling, whatever.
Yeah.
They're, you know, Hispanic, much greater number than Asians. We don't even count the ultimate tip of the cap to the Asian is you guys are statistically a minority, the definition of minority. We don't even count you as a minority anymore. Yeah. That's how much you're flourishing.
That's
sort of like,
it is.
Like Jews.
But the thing about it, yes, but the thing about it is like Jews, very much like the Chinese, you know, the ignorance of what that, I mean, because I did see the clip of the podcast, was how ignorant the two guys were. And it was just an ugly thing because what it was like they didn't realize like the why there's Chinese restaurants or whatever they got to do. It's because the Chinese, like the Jews, weren't allowed to compete on an equal playing field with everybody else in society. They were allowed to do this. And so they would have to thrive in that specific thing. Just like Jews, when they came out of the diaspora and were kicked out of Spain, they came up through Czechoslovakia, and they were allowed to be in jewelry or into finance or into banking.
So that's why we have money lenders and delicious food.
Chinatown in New York, and then all of New York, Haimetown.
So, I mean, that sense, you mean, like,
thank you, Jesse.
I do get it. But at the same
time,
what is the balance to, like, you don't want to embolden racists either? Because my friend said, hey, that night.
A couple things. All right. First things first. I'm with you in that when I hear someone going down this road of anything, being mean to a group or to an individual, like being mean to a celebrity or who's put some weight on or something, I'm like, please end it with a punchline. You know what I mean? Like, that would be nuts.
That's right. I was waiting for the joke.
But to say, we're going to judge how funny things are and figure out whether you need to be dismissed based on whether your joke is a 4 or if it gets above a 7, then you can stay. You know, like, Dave Chappelle, you're funny, but that wasn't funny. Like, now we're in some weird territory, right?
Who gets to decide? That's the thing about free speech. Well, no, there is hate speech. Well, who's going to define that? And it's just pretty simple. You got to have all of it or none of it. You're either for all of it or none of it.
Oh, my God.
Even the repugnant stuff. You have to support that. You're against it. So, and that's really the key. And like this was, I was waiting for the joke, and I get the joke didn't come. And I do think though, what's the line? And I think we have to discuss this. If somebody just has a microphone in their hand and they're just spouting racist stuff, it's like, he can dismiss it. Like, I'm a comedian. I was telling a joke. But if there's not a joke and it's just racist, racism,
well,
you got to call it that.
Here's
just
my line.
My
line is sort of action. I want to know what you have done to anyone, women, gay, black, white, whatever.
Okay.
Like, I want to know if you put your hands on anyone. I want to know if you didn't hire somebody because they were of something. Like, the first thing I want to know, you know, if you're an arsonist who's never struck a match, I'm not interested in you.
Okay.
I don't care if you're an arsonist in your heart about fire.
If somebody calls somebody misogynist, but if you have, like, if you've prevented a woman from getting a job, Then
I'm known as a misogynist. I'm known as a misogynist
for objectification of women.
people, I don't know, just from horrible things I say, but I'm known as a misogynist.
Self-loving misogynist.
The thing I get that always, you can tell me all the jokes you want. I'll never laugh as hard as when people tweet me, I feel sorry for Adam's wife and daughter. It's like, you fucking feel sorry for my wife and daughter? They are sitting in a fucking jacuzzi right now, drinking champagne.
Homemade
oil. I'm fucking flying coach to Kentucky. That's my life. All I do is fucking work, and all they do is chillax.
People have accused me of being racist because I played other races. But it's like, hey, I didn't write the fucking role. Somebody wrote it, and I didn't put on the makeup.
Here's the way I like to think of it. If you are just up there spouting out racist rhetoric with a microphone in your hand on stage,
okay,
and never being funny, you're not going to be a successful comedian in this society.
Right.
Eventually, we need to hear some jokes drop. Otherwise, we ain't interested.
It's a little bit of a rally.
You're going down to Michael Richards.
That problem's going to take care of itself.
That problem is going to solve itself.
Yeah, I agree with that.
If you are actually doing things to groups, if you are putting your hands on people or hurting people or getting involved with legislation to prevent them from doing whatever they need to do, then that's something that's concrete and that needs to be addressed as well. Short of that, I'm not that interested because it will sort its way out.
The Shane Gillis thing, I think in my mind, that could have been a learning lesson and just said, hey, listen, that's unacceptable. And I'm like, hey, get to a joke, or that was just to mention these words without any point to it. It seemed what it was. It was a waste.
And they used to say people vote with their wallets. You know what I mean? Like the same people. Like if you truly, if you're offended by what he said, or you think Saturday Night Live made a really bad decision, or you're horrified with SNL, like, don't watch the show. Don't support the sponsors.
But don't make that decision.
But don't push them to a
well, don't celebrate. And the thing is, that's the thing that really pissed me off the most. Is like that is emboldening these assholes to continue this behavior, because that's not a comedy audience anyway. Somebody's trying to root for somebody to get fired. It's like, well, fuck that.
I think
you could be upset with it, but don't root for somebody to get fired.
Gainfully employed people pay taxes and consume goods. Like this notion of the end game, which is which is they're not allowed to work, is kind of a weird, ill-conceived thought in terms of our. First off, it's cruel, like saying no more work for you, bucko.
Yeah.
But also,
without a trial,
why is a society do we want this person to be sitting at home or going on the dole or collecting unemployment insurance? Like, let them work and make them a pariah.
Hopefully it's a cycle. Like one of my first shows when I was on Saturday Night Live, Andrew Dice Clay was going to be, somebody fell out, they needed to get somebody, and then somebody, I won't say who, suggested, hey, Andrew Dice Clay, blah, 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 and I said, okay, that kind of makes sense. And then a couple of people on the cast boycotted.
Yeah.
Right.
Nora Dunn and
Jan Hook said, well, I'm not going to do the show then. And Lorne Michaels, that's why I think Lorne Michaels, in this case, I don't think he's the one who, I think he would have kept Shane Gillis on. He's a good guy. And I think he would did the, but I think it was pressure from, must have been somewhere else on that show to not have him hired. I'm sure they would have tried.
You think there's some sort of cast pressure?
I don't know. I'm not going to speculate. I think the Saturday Night Live, they have their own control. That's a thing. So somebody, I'm going to say it wasn't Lorne. I'm going to say somebody else in that show, whether it was other people, group, or whatever. I just think that they become so, you know, you're so aware of your gravitas after a while that you suddenly, you know, you think, well, this is about
saying
something
about us. I'm going to tease or challenge everybody this question. Take care of Geico, go to break, we'll come back. But my bigger overarching question is if Shane was just going on and making racial slurs with no destination or punchline or whatever, and SNL is the best of the best sketch improv comedy.
Right.
Yeah, Drew?
He's the best of the best.
He's following.
Well, then where's the comedy? Like, why are we plucking this guy? This is a white dude.
There was some. I've heard.
Don't answer. I'm curious if he does a bunch of funny characters or a dead one man show that was killer off.
I'll tell you after.
I will tell you first about Geico. Everyone's got the to do list. How about you add, save hundreds of dollars on your car insurance? You don't have to go anywhere. Just go to geico.com. 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on your auto insurance. Take that extra money, put it in your pocket, be the most rewarding thing you do all day. That is GEICO. Just a few minutes you could be saving. Could see just how much you're saving on your auto insurance at GEICO.com. All right, quick break, and then we'll come back with the answer to that question right after this.